What's up and welcome to the Active Amputee Podcast. Everything people with a limb difference need to live an active and exciting lifestyle. I'm Bjorn Eser, the founder of and shaker and maker behind the Active Amputee. And today you're listening to episode number 38. In episode number 38, I'm talking with Joe Mahon. Joe Mahon is one of the founders of the adjustable socket by Click Medical. And today I have the pleasure of talking with Joe Mahon. Joe is a very experienced prosthetist from the US, and he's one of the founders and one of the movers and shakers and makers behind Click Medical, a US-based company that's probably one of the pioneering ones behind adjustable sockets. Welcome, Joe. It's great having you on the show.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Pleasure. You probably know, as an amputee myself, who has been struggling with a socket fit for, I guess, the better part of a decade, I'm extremely pleased to have the chance to talk with you today. When it comes to adjustable sockets, what are we actually talking about?
Well, when we talk about adjustable sockets, our adjustable socket technology allows the user to tighten or loosen their device while they're wearing it. So adjustable technology for us requires the use of a small dial, and the dial allows the user to tighten the fit of their device or loosen it depending on their activities, depending on how the fit is for that day, depending on their volume for that day, depending on if, you know, what the weather is like, a lot of variables that adjust that will affect the fit of your device. And our technology allows you to adjust on the fly when needed.
And that is a real game changer for many amputees. I mean, as I said, I can speak from my own experiences. Someone who wants to be very active on the one hand, and obviously on the other hand, also wants to have a comfortable socket, a socket that is up to the level of activity. So sometimes you really want to have that snug fit, that where you know it's not falling off. And sometimes when they're more the long office and couch potato days on the sofa, where you want to have a more comfortable fit, and it is a real game changer. Can you tell us a bit more about what's the history behind it? How did you actually, I mean, you're a prosthetist, but how did you move away from these very rigid carbon fiber or whatever sockets, which once they're done, and then the amputee has to live with it? How did the idea for adjustable sockets came along?
Well, I've been in the industry now for probably 27 years, I think, 27 or 28 years. And in the very beginning, I would just kind of notice these patterns, and people seem to have the same kind of fit issues, and they were having them in the same spots on their limb. So as a prosthetist, you kind of have a bag of tricks that you use when people are having issues with their fit. We fit devices, we make them, and we give them to the patient, and then they are expected to wear them for, you know, 3, 4, 5 years. But during that 3, 4, 5 years, we're constantly having to address various fit issues, whether they gain weight or lose weight, volume, activity levels, etc. So one day I was skipping work. I was what we say in the U.S. I was playing hooky, and I was just having, you know, kind of a very hectic, busy time of my life, and I just needed to get out of the office. So one day I skipped. And went skiing instead, and grabbed my girlfriend at the time. And we were living up in the mountains above Salt Lake City. We were living basically at the foot of a ski resort. So access to the mountains was pretty easy. But that morning, I said, you know what, I'm not going to go in today. I'm gonna take some time for myself. And so I was on the chairlift, and a patient called me. And she said, Joe, you know, I need you to tighten up my socket. And I said, okay, you know, I'm skiing today, but I can come in tomorrow and do it. And she said, well, I'm leaving for Washington, D.C. tomorrow, and I really need to see you today if possible. And I said, well, you know, okay, it's going to take me a couple hours to get off the mountain and get down to the office. But let's do that, and I can see you later today. So I hung up the phone, and I was still on the chairlift. And as I'm on the chairlift, I'm just thinking to myself, gosh, you know, if this patient could only adjust her own socket, then I could keep skiing. So the motivation for this is somewhat selfish. I just wanted to I wanted to stay on the mountain and keep skiing with my girlfriend, right? But I had a job to do. And so I got up to the top of the mountain, and I'm still thinking, kind of stewing over this whole notion of, gosh, if the patient could only adjust herself, then I wouldn't have to go in. And as I'm thinking about this, my girlfriend at the time had some new snowboarding boots with a small little dial on it. And I'm looking at her as she's adjusting her boots and tightening them up by turning this little teeny dial. Normally, she'd have to lace them like the traditional way, like you lace a shoe, which takes sometimes a long time. And it was hard to get the boots really tight, lacing it that way. So this new dial, she said, "Oh, this is great. This is a great new dial. I can just turn it and I can tighten up my boots when I need to. And then I just pull the dial out and release when I'm on the chair and I can sit comfortably." And I was like, interesting. And so she took off on her snowboard and she went about 100 feet or so. And as she's snowboarding, she reached down and she adjusted her snowboarding boot again. And at that moment, that's kind of when the light bulb went off in my head. And I thought to myself, gosh, I wonder if there's a way to integrate that dial into a prosthetic and that would allow the user, the patient, to tighten or loosen their device, just like my girlfriend was tightening and loosening her snowboarding boots. So I kind of thought about that the whole way down the ski run. I got down to the bottom. I said goodbye to my girlfriend, went back to the house, changed, went down to the office, saw my patient, and she said, "Yeah, I'd like for you to tighten up my socket." And I said, "We tightened up your socket a couple weeks ago. We put in some pads." And she said, "It was great, but I didn't need them after a couple weeks, so I ripped them out. But now I want you to put them back in." And this is kind of a pattern that we would consistently see in prosthetics is, there's areas of the limb that we can adjust, and there's areas of the limb that we don't touch. And those areas of the limb that we can adjust, we can put pads in there, or we can grind them out, or we can add material. Those are kind of very specific areas, load-bearing areas on the limb. So when I came back from the office, I grabbed a razor knife and I went back and I chopped up my girlfriend's snowboarding boots. She wasn't very thrilled about that, but I obviously bought her a new pair. But I removed the lace and the dial and everything from the boot, and I then attached it to a prosthetic, making those areas that fluctuate on a limb, made those areas adjust. And I tried it, a couple of days later on a patient. And I said, "What do you think?" I had them walk down the hall, and they were wearing their device. And I said, "Okay, tighten it up a couple clicks," and they tightened it. And then I say, "Okay, keep walking. Okay, tighten it up a couple more clicks, and keep walking. Okay, now loosen it up." And I had them come back to me, and the patient said, "You know what, Joe? I think you're onto something here. I think you could really make something with this adjustable technology." And so at that point, this was in 2009, so quite a long time ago. At that point, I filed a few patents, and much to my surprise, I ended up getting those patents a couple of years later. And that's when we started the business of selling adjustability into the at that point into the prosthetic space. But now we're kind of broad. It's more broad. We sell into the orthotic and the prosthetic space. So that's kind of how it all began.
Great. That's a really great story. And I think you just made a really good case for skipping work every once in a while. There's
I think it's
mile
important.
there's mileage in having this creative off time.
Absolutely. I think everyone needs a little bit of time just to kind of settle their brain and to have the time and the space to come up with some new ideas. So I'm a big proponent for every once in a while taking some personal time.
It resonates with me. But a great story, and obviously something where you say it's not just a great story, it actually is a real life improvement for I don't know how many thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. I don't know how many people actually by now already benefit from your from the adjustability of sockets. Do you
I
have an
think
idea
we're
on
over, yeah, I think we're over 100,000 now. And on the
right.
prosthetic side, I think we also sell adjustability into the orthotic space, which is, orthotic space is bracing, which is a much larger volume, much bigger field. I'd say we'd probably be, probably close to 100,000 units in that space as well. So we're definitely getting up there in terms of adoption and people using our products.
I mean, if you look back to first chopping up your girlfriend's new boots and then saying, "Well, let me do a first model or a series of a small series of models and try them out with patience." You already reported that, okay, there's someone feeding back information saying, "I think you're onto something." At the same time, I'm pretty sure there were also some challenges. If you look back in the initial years, what were some of the harder technical challenges in the beginning?
The technical challenges in the very beginning were the materials. So in the very beginning, we used a wire lace, which would, which would put pressure onto the socket itself. The wire was metal, and with every little movement and every step that someone takes, and there's, people take thousands of steps in a day, there was this little micro movement that would happen with the wire. And so we saw in the very early days, we saw wire failure happen really fast. And in some instances, you could just have someone walk down the hall and it would just be enough movement that it would just snap the wire. So we quickly changed from wire lace to a soft spectra lace, which is much, much stronger and lasts a lot longer. So those that was kind of the big one of the biggest challenges in the beginning. The other challenge technically was routing the lace throughout the device, because originally we just kind of slapped the lace and the wire to the outside of the device, and which only allowed us to make some very basic areas of adjustment. We could maybe adjust the posterior or the backside of a socket, but that was about it. When we started to integrate the tubing and the lace between the layers of, while we're fabricating it, we're able to really very precisely route the tubing and the lace throughout the socket so that we can adjust multiple areas of the limb at different levels of the limb, different size areas of adjustment, all on the same device. So that like fabrication method coming, learning and figuring that out really opened up the door in terms of adjustability, in terms of what we could do with it. Because at that point, when we started to put the tubing and the lace between the layers, it made it very precise and very targeted. Those were kind of the technical challenges. Outside of the technical challenges, we had some kind of some industry challenges just because it was so new, right? And it was a technology that we didn't learn about when we were in school for, prosthetic design. So because of that, we had, a fair bit of pushback and said, we don't want our patients to be adjusting their own limbs. That's not their job. That's our job, is to adjust their limb. And I said, I understand. I get it. This product maybe not for everybody. If someone has dementia or Alzheimer's or maybe a mental, cognition issue, mental condition, maybe they're not a candidate for this device. Maybe they don't know what tight means. Or, if they think tight is good, they think, maybe tighter is better. So there's some people that maybe this is not the tool for them, simply because they may not know how to operate it. But for the majority of people, and I'd say 75% or more of the people, I think this is a great tool that allows people to, just tighten and loosen the fit of their device when needed. We can control how tight it goes. We can control how loose it goes. So there are control factors that are built into the design. So, if we're concerned about someone over-tightening or compromising their circulation or something, we can limit the amount of adjustment that happens. So, but in the early days, people didn't quite understand that. And so there was some pushback from kind of the old guard, I would say, the old timers in the industry that were not super receptive to the idea of patients adjusting their own device. But, hey, everyone adjusts their own shoes. There's adjustment everywhere. It's on our car seats, it's in our on our desk, it's in our shoes, it's on our belts. We're adjusting things every day, so I'm pretty confident that most people can adjust their own device appropriately for what they need at that moment.
But do you think the pushback was, I mean, as in terms of real concern, I mean, that the industry says, okay, we're really worried something will happen. Is it an issue, or was it an issue around warranty issues or insurance issues, or was it also an issue about people losing economic gain?
I don't think they thought that far ahead yet. I don't think in terms of an issue of, it costs money obviously to buy the bits and pieces, and some people get reimbursed for them through their insurer, some people do not. So there could be some cost prohibitive things there in the beginning that people said, "Oh, this costs money, but I don't get reimbursed for it, so I'm not going to do it." But I think I don't think it was, I don't think people were thinking that far ahead, thinking, gosh, if I make this socket adjustable, it might last 4 or 5 years rather than 3 years. And now my sales are going to go down because, this device is going to last longer for the user. I don't think people were really thinking about that in the beginning. I don't think they had gotten that far in terms of like, what can this technology actually do? That is still a concern, and people say, hey, that's part of our business is remaking devices. But in my opinion, I want to give my users and the patient the best possible device, the best device with the most features, that's going to make their life better. And if they can get 4 or 5 years rather than 3 years, I'm okay with that personally. Some other business people may not be, but I'm okay with that because I want what's best for them and not necessarily what's best for my pocketbook.
Somewhere in the show notes, I put a link so that people can actually have a look at what it actually looks like to your homepage. I think it might be interesting for the people who haven't seen it yet. But for the listeners here, just to get us a better understanding, I know from my own experience, whenever we build a new socket, and I must say I'm not a big fan of building new sockets. I'm a bit
No.
impatient then, and you think, oh, somehow the old one was okay-ish, and we started a new one because of fit issues or because something broke, and you think, oh, it's another tedious, long process. So I must say I'm not fully embracing it. And at the same time, I'm always really amazed by the human body, where they change tiny amounts of the padding, I don't know, 2 millimeters, 3 millimeters, and you have the feeling it makes a world of a difference. And I can see that with kind of these really rigid sockets where you say, okay, we go back and we grind a bit here and we put, I don't know, a bit of cork here and we, I don't know, add a bit more padding here. And I can see that. But how does it work with the adjustable system where you say, okay, we have then moving parts. We have parts either small cutout windows, which then can be moved and tightened, or we have the whole thing kind of sliced up in the middle, and the whole back can be tightened a bit more. But how do I factor that in the process when I say, okay, we're still on the interims, on the diagnostic socket? Can people already try it out in that phase, or do they basically have to build a stiff, normal interim socket and then hope that the prosthetist gets it right when he slices this up and builds in this new device? How does it work?
Well, you're not alone in the initial fitting process. Nobody, and I've been in this industry for a long time and have fit thousands of devices, nobody likes to make a new socket, or very few, I should say. So you're not alone. That's a tedious process. And like you said, sometimes you're like, man, I just want my old device. But newer. I want the fit of my old device, but I want it in a new shell. That's always a challenge, but it's crucial. And in my opinion, the longer you take during that kind of preparatory interim phase, the better success you're going to have in the long run. So if you take the time to get a check socket and verify the volume and the fit, in a rigid check socket, okay? Because once you start chopping it up and making it adjustable, you can't really verify the volume anymore because now that's changing constantly. So you make a rigid check socket, verify the volume and the fit. And then at that point, this is an interim phase or the preparatory phase, check socket phase, some people may call it. You can essentially determine where you want the adjustability to happen. I start with just kind of squeezing the person's limb and loading it up in certain areas and saying, how does it feel when I put pressure here? How does it feel when I put pressure there? Get kind of a rough idea as to where I can put more pressure, where I can load more pressure. And then I will make small little pads and I'll slide them into the check socket, the rigid, hard check socket. I'll slide them into to where I think adjustability should be happening. And I'll just make little thin ones and I will just put in one at a time because if you put in, multiple pads at one time, we'll never be able to get it on. So I'll put it in, maybe between the tibia and the fibula what's called the pre-tib area or the interosseous membrane. I'll put a pad there and I'll say, you know, how does that feel? And they may say, you know what, that feels pretty good, but it's a little too close to the crest of my tibia, or it's putting pressure on my fibula head. Can you move it down a little bit? And I'll take that pad and I'll move it down or move it over. Say, okay, how does that feel? And they'll say, okay, that one feels great. I'll say, okay, great. I'll mark that on the check socket, and then I'll take that pad out and I'll put another one in. And I'll check that area. And you know, for a below the knee type of device, I might have two or three areas of adjustment on that device. So I'll make sure that I check those out before I start chopping up the socket. If at that point I feel like, you know what, I still don't know if these areas of adjustment are in the right spot. So we do make a kit of bits and pieces that allow you to put our adjustable technology onto a plastic check socket or a plastic temporary device, and allows you to cut that device up and make it adjust just like you would for the final definitive device. But it's all done in the check socket phase. So there is a step that you can take to guarantee that your areas of adjustability are in the correct spot. Before you go to the definitive phase. Once you go to the definitive phase, that's the lamination process usually happens. And once you laminate, there's really no going back.
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah. in some instances, people have, you know, if you have a transtibial with maybe three different areas of adjustment, you have three different panels. If you find that one of those areas maybe isn't right, or it's putting pressure on something that it shouldn't be, you can simply remove the padding from that panel. And now that panel can expand out, but it can't compress. Okay. Mm. Because the amount of padding that we put on the inside of those panels, that's the amount of compression that the patient will feel. So if they're feeling too much compression on one of those areas, we can simply thin that padding out, or we can simply remove that padding altogether so that panel can no longer compress. It can expand, but it can't compress.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
And our system is not just about compression. People are always like, oh, you know, compress, compress, compress. I don't, you know, yes, compression is important. People lose volume. People go from being inactive to high activity in a matter of seconds sometimes, right? Or minutes. So having the ability to compress and tighten instantly is important. But I think having the ability to expand is just as important. And I mean that mostly in the morning when you're putting that device on. People often struggle putting their device on in the morning because they're swollen. Their fluid has kind of settled throughout their body throughout the night. Maybe they ate something the night before that made them retain more water. Maybe they had a salty meal or something, a bowl of popcorn or something, and they've just retained water, right? And so in the morning, people often struggled getting their device on. And that really kind of, you know, concerns me from a safety standpoint, because people will get their leg on maybe three quarters of the way or halfway, and they got to start their day. They got to get going. And that was always kind of a safety concern, because if you don't have your device on completely, all those little details and features aren't lining up where they should. And not only that, but then you also have a lot of instability if you don't have the device on completely. So there's a safety element there. But oftentimes people would, you know, stand up, they'd stomp, they'd get their leg on as far as they could, and they'd start their day. But I think having the ability to open up your device, expand it, and allow yourself to completely seat yourself into the device, get it completely on, and then slowly close throughout the day, I think that's very beneficial for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, just putting the device on, you know, for a lot of people can be a big struggle. It seems very simple and very easy for a lot of people, but it's not. You know, a lot of people struggle with that.
Yeah. And even within individual like me, I had times when for years, no issues, just get into the socket in the morning, wear it the whole day, you know, take it off in 11 o'clock in the night or 11:30, go to bed, done. And I had days a couple of years later, and different socket, but from the same prosthetist, same experienced team. So not that we say, okay, it's a different quality of socket. It was a very well done socket, but somehow I guess my body changed. And really in the morning, at that time I didn't have liner system. I had just a skin on, you know, the normal skin vacuum suction system. And I somewhere still have a picture where we took a picture where my wife is basically hanging on to this device, which helps you to get into the
The donning sleeve. Yeah,
Yeah, the
the
donning
woolen
sleeve.
sleeve.
She's basically hanging on that with her whole weight, and we don't get my stump
Oh.
into the socket. And in the afternoon, I'm out with a kid in a baby carrier on the back, and I have to hold my socket with the one hand while I'm walking
Oh.
with a kid on the back. And I mean, there's probably 4 hours in between, and really, just as you said, within a single day, not you know after Christmas when you had, I don't know, too much turkey, and just within a single day.
Yeah, people fluctuate, yes, by the we could take a leg off someone and we would measure it right away, and then we would wait 15 or 20 minutes and they would be several millimeters bigger, with just in a matter of minutes, right? So and there's a lot of research out there now, and a lot that's coming out of the University of Washington, Joan Sanders and Kate Allen's lab up in at UW. They're doing some great research on just that, on because oftentimes people will take their leg off when they're seated, just to kind of give them a little bit of comfort, a little bit of freedom, just allow their limb to breathe a little bit, and just to get it out of the socket. And what we notice is that the limb will expand during that time. Okay, so some people will use that as a kind of, instead of using socks or adjusting their device, they'll simply take their leg off, take their liner off, let it sit, getting some air for 5 or 10 minutes. And when that happens, fluid returns back to the limb. It's called fluid stabilization. So fluid goes back into the limb, which is great. That's what we want to have happen, right? Well, we can do that now with our system by simply releasing the tension on the device by pulling out the dial, without having to take the leg off. Okay, we don't have to remove the device now from our body. We don't have to expose it or show anybody. We can simply release the tension with the dial, allow the socket to expand and get bigger, which in turn allows fluid to then return back into the limb during those times of rest. So, I mean, we can squeeze and compress a leg all day long. That's not really the mission here. That's not the goal. Okay, because we can squeeze and we can push all the fluid out. By the end of the day, we could squeeze that thing down to nothing. Okay, that's not the point. Okay, the point is to tighten when you need it, when you're active, when it's ill-fitting or loose. But then when you sit down, having the ability to loosen, expand, give your body a little bit of room to grow and to regain some fluid back into the limb. So that fluid stabilization, that equilibrium, is what we're shooting for. And I think having an adjustable socket really can accommodate those changes, whether you're active or whether you're seated.
Much of that resonates with me. And actually, one of my tricks before I had an adjustable socket was when I was mountain walking, and especially when I don't drink enough during the day, I really have issues with the fit in the late afternoon. And obviously, when you're mountain walking, I sweat a lot, so I'm not carrying 8 liters of water or something. So normally, I know there is an issue with the fit. And once even the second seat in the ring doesn't do the job anymore, these little cutout patches from old liners, which I kind of press in there. But normally, before I descend on a steep slope or something, if I know it's longer and I don't want to take it off somewhere halfway down, I make sure I take it off at the top. And as you said, let the let it air a bit, let the fluid get back into the stump, just five to 10 minutes, and then I have another snug fit again. And it's yeah. Great. Joe, moving from all these really interesting discussions, if you look back at 10, 12, 13 years of the development, and we said earlier, I mean, your initial idea turned into a company, Click Medical, which has various devices on the market and which really reaches out and collaborates with other prosthetists, with clinics, and with a lot of users directly. If you look back, what is kind of the moment where you think back and think, wow, here we really made a huge difference, or this is one of my proudest or happiest memories in terms of, the development of this kit, of this new adjustable system, where you basically put amputees and prosthetic users back in the driving seat, as you said, where they can adjust on the fly, I think you mentioned or called it earlier.
A few of those moments, I guess, in the early days would be when we, show up at an event and we see, multiple people walking around with adjustability. In the very beginning, it was just me making adjustable devices for my patients. And then that kind of blossomed into a business that then we started selling out into the world, right? But the world's a big place. And in those early years, I never saw those people. Like we'd sell it to the, out there, but you never see people. But I think when I started seeing people at the trade shows and the kind of the amputee conventions and things, started seeing people actually showing up with adjustability and being really excited about it, that's when it kind of like to me, like, wow, like I felt like, gosh, we really are making a difference. It's just not, we're not just, shipping stuff out the door and selling products. It was proof that adjustability was working for people. So that was kind of, just seeing it out in the world. And I see it out here when I'm walking around Salt Lake City, and I see people with prosthetic that has a dial on it that's used for adjustability. They're not my patient. I don't know them from anybody. But I see it and I think to myself, wow, that's pretty awesome, that they are using adjustability. It's becoming, more and more popular. So that's great to see, just kind of out in the world, seeing it, actually being used by people that aren't associated with me personally. I guess the other kind of moments that kind of speak to me in terms of like, hey, you made it, was when they started putting our technology into what's called the Atlas of Limb Prosthetics. That's kind of like the Atlas of Limb Prosthetics is kind of like the Bible of prosthetics, right? It's what we learn in school. It's what we're taught at the university. It's what we follow throughout our whole, career is this Atlas of Limb Prosthetics. So if you are in the Atlas of Limb Prosthetics, that is you're starting to become the standard of care.
Cool.
And that's our goal.
Yeah,
That's our
yeah.
goal is to eventually become one of the standards of care. Okay. We're not saying everyone out there should have adjustability, that adjustability should be on every device. We're just saying we finally feel like it's a legitimate product. It's a legitimate application. It shows real purpose and people are really benefiting from it. And when you see your technology in the Atlas of Limb Prosthetics, to me, it says, okay, we finally made it. We are
Yes.
recognized, and it is an appropriate plan of care. It's an
Yeah.
appropriate method, an appropriate technology to use on patients. Because in the
Yeah.
beginning, I'm skeptical, right? I've never invented anything in my life, and so you kind of you have some self-doubt, and you put it out there, and people are happy about it. But until your colleagues and your peers, other prosthetists in the industry, until they recognize it, it didn't really resonate with me yet. So that was really kind of, I think, one of the big hurdles that for me, personally, that kind of put us on the next level was that recognition in those publications.
Yeah. Joe, you were just saying, yeah, and then we started selling out to the world, delivering all over the planet. And I mean, from my work, I get around quite a lot in the so-called global south. I've been sub-Saharan Africa quite a lot. I lived in Southeast Asia. I'm still connected to some rehab centers and others in Uganda and other countries. And I'm just wondering, I mean, in these much more challenging contexts for people with disabilities, people who lost a limb or had limb deformities, but very often the health sector is not comparable to the luxury we have. And I know we often like to complain, but very often
Yes.
we have quite a good system supporting us. And very often in other countries, the prosthetists are not that well trained. They don't have access to the materials. They don't have the resources. And also the patients don't have the resources to actually say, well, I can afford a new limb. So it's probably something that comes off the shelf or has to fit more or less, but it's not, there's not so much attention paid to all the details because they just can't afford it. Do you know if your services and the products, do you know if they are available in some of the countries where people with limb loss have it much, much harder?
Yes, they are. We are in, I believe, about 30 different countries around the world. I've been to most of them in terms of training them and getting them up to speed on the how to use it, when to use it, when not to use it, etc. So I've done a lot of traveling myself and getting people kind of on board and up to speed with our technology. Yes, people in third world countries or developing countries, they don't have access to all the technology that we have, right? but they do make prosthetics very much the same way that I make prosthetics in the United States. The process is very similar. Some of the materials may change, but the process is very similar. And our products are quite inexpensive compared to most prosthetic devices out there or prosthetic things. You know, feet are thousands of dollars. Knees are thousands of dollars. Our product is minuscule compared to what those prices are. So it's not a big upfront cost. Where I see our products in the developing world being really beneficial, and personally, I've done a lot of work down in Haiti, have been down there probably 20 times, especially after the earthquake, making prosthetic devices for people there because they don't have much access to care, especially prosthetic care. But our thinking is that, gosh, if you only get one limb in a lifetime, I really hope that thing adjusts, you know, because boy, life is already hard. But to have a device that's ill-fitting is extremely difficult. And in a lot of these developing countries, it's unfortunately not about function and what you can do with the device. It's about fitting in and looking complete or looking whole. Very important, especially in Haiti. They didn't care much about the function. I mean, of course they did, but it wasn't about function. It was how they looked. Because when you look different in some of those cultures, you are treated differently. And so people really struggled with the appearance of how they looked. And so in those countries, they want to fit in. They don't want to stick out. They want to be like just like everybody else. Having a prosthetic is very critical in that process of becoming whole, and having something that works can be even more challenging. Not only because they may only get one limb per lifetime, but the people providing the care probably haven't been through the same training that I've been through. Okay. They may have gone through some international prosthetic training, or maybe it's a trade or something that they learned from a mentor or something, but they didn't go to a master's or PhD program like we do here in the States. So the level of care available is probably less, right? So they are not making sockets the way that I make a socket necessarily, right? Just because their lack of experience. But I think having adjustability for those people that are lacking experience, I think that's really important.
I can
make a socket that's a zero ply fit. The patient doesn't have to wear any socks, right? That's really hard to do. That's a really difficult level to achieve in terms of fitting a device, right? Usually it's a one ply or a two ply or a three ply fit. You know, you have this little range, right? But to get zero ply, it takes years and years and years of experience to get there. Well, in these countries, they don't have the experience. They don't have that expertise necessarily. And so having a device that has this range of fit, has this adjustability so that you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to be a 20-year veteran of prosthetic making. You can be brand new. You can be a student. You can be a resident and still have similar results because of the adjustability that you can integrate. We hope, you know, I see, adjustability in those areas, those developing nations. I see it, you know, maybe it's more important or should be more prevalent in those areas just because of those reasons. Access to care is limited. They they have an issue. They can't just call the prosthetist and go in. I mean, when I was in Haiti, we'd have patients that would take 2 or 3 days for them to get across from one side of the island to the other to come and see me for a little teeny minor thing. 2 or 3 days, you know, like that's not nothing. Right. So, again, empowering the user to make these minor changes that happen throughout the day, maybe throughout the month or throughout the year. We think that's so powerful on so many different levels for many different cultures and many different places of the world.
Yeah, so true. Yeah. Joe, we're almost coming to an end here, but before we do so, let's look ahead. I mean, we talked a lot about the development and some of the challenges and the highs and the lows during the development of the RevoFit and the adjustable sockets. If you look ahead, what do you think the next, I don't know, next 5, 6, 7 years will bring in terms of adjustability? Do you see anything exciting new coming up? Anything groundbreaking? Or do you think it's minor changes along the route we've traveled so far?
I think we're just at the very beginning. So I think there's going to be some great new changes here in the future. One that Qlik is implementing is that we've come up with a new dial system. So we've been using a dial that's been in the industry for 15 years. It started in the snowboarding industry and moved into ski boots, and then it went into golfing shoes and other types of footwear. We've been using those dials for 10 plus years, and they've been great. But they're meant for soft goods. They're not meant for putting on a rigid carbon fiber prosthetic that, is worn by a, 110 kilo patient that is stepping off of curbs and going up and down ramps and things like that. Those little dials, they have a hard time sometimes taking that ground reaction force that happens as people are walking. So we went back to the drawing board and we listened to our customers, and a lot of our customers says, "Hey, we want a dial that not only micro adjusts forwards, but one that can micro adjust backwards. We want a dial that's going to last 3 to 5 years that we don't have to replace. We want a dial that has some safety features." So we kind of, over the years, took notes, and then about 3 years ago, we embarked on a new project, which was to create a dial that we use for adjustability that is specific for medical. It's specific for orthotic and prosthetic use, specific for hard goods, carbon fiber, rigid plastics, 3D printed materials, etc. So the dial that we have, it's coming out next year in 23.
Exciting.
It's pretty exciting. All the internal pieces are metal, so very robust, very strong. It has the ability to micro adjust forwards and backwards. There's two different modes to the dial, so you can take up lace really fast if you need to, if you need to open something up and close something. Or if you just want to micro adjust, it also has a power mode, which allows you to micro adjust forwards and backwards with a lot of power, a 7-to-1 ratio. So we just basically took what we had and we're just trying to make it better and more applicable to our little niche, our small little industry. So that's coming in the future. Beyond that new dial that's coming out, and we have, that's version one. We also have other things that are in the works in terms of making the dial smaller, lower profile. And I think, 5 or 6 years from now, we might start seeing some automation. We've already been playing with some little motors in our lab here in Salt Lake, and which are connected to a little Bluetooth bracelet and allows the user to adjust their device electronically. It's a little teeny motor.
Cool.
So, there's a long ways to go there. We're just kind of scratching the surface on motorization. But I do think, in the future, 5, 10, 15 years from now, we could see adjustable sockets that have motors on them that are microprocess controlled. They're controlled with an app, maybe they're controlled with a bracelet, maybe they're just controlled with, buttons on the device itself, or maybe it's connected to some AI and it's self-adjusting. So there's some great technology that's happening, some great innovation that's happening here in the States on that front. So that's really exciting. So I think we're just at the very start of adjustability. I think adjustability in 5 or so years will be pretty mainstream for a lot of people. And then, what can we do with it after that? How can we make devices better and easier and, more appropriate for our end users, for our patients? We're constantly, trying to make advancements and do things better. That's where I see it going. Time will tell.
That is really exciting. And I always remember, I mean, I have three kids, and the oldest one's already out of the house. But about 5 years, 6 years ago, when I was really struggling with socket fit, it was nice to see having these three kids around the dinner table and all kind of knowing from first experience my frustrations and my, seeing my good days and my bad days. And sometimes the bad days were funny and sometimes the bad days were just frustrating. And this good mixture of positive, naive approach with kind of really thinking, well, how about, we have these things which automatically adjust to, or you just heat them up with, I don't know, hot water, and then you mold them around the day's needs, and then you take the hot water away and they fit. And really having great ideas as, you know, 5, 6, 7, 10-year-old ones. And at the same time, then having my wife, who comes with a more analytical approach, says she's really into AI and other things, and says, yeah, maybe we have these things where, you know, you have a AI kind of material which communicates with the body in one way or another and feels where the muscles are better today and where there's a bit more, I don't know, wobbly fat from last dinner, and and really having these ideas around, then going through them one by one and saying, wow, there's some amazing ideas around. And then a couple of years later, actually saying, well, these were discussions around the dinner table with the family. And suddenly you see, no, actually, MIT and others are thinking along the same lines, or picking up some of these more out of the box ideas and say, well, they might be out of the box, but they're good.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And it's great to see that they're people who actually know what they're doing. Thinking
it's
along
great
those
to
lines,
see.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great to see the young people that they don't have the history. They didn't go to school for prosthetics. They didn't go through all the, you know, mechanical engineering and all the stuff that I went through. Right. So I'm kind of, you know, I fall into a certain section. Right. Kids are open. They, you know, the world is their oyster. Right. Like they can, you know, they're thinking way outside of the box.
Yeah.
And which I love. And I love people coming and bringing ideas that are not from our industry. Okay.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
And that's what we did. We basically adopted something that was used in the outdoor world, in the outdoor industry, this little dial, and we integrated it into our medical space. And when we did that, we also brought along a team of people that were also from the outdoor industry. Our marketing people are from the outdoor industry. Our sales people, our operational people, they're all from the outdoor industry, whether it was socks or dials or clothing or hard goods. We brought these people into Click Medical, which was great, because it brought this kind of fresh air. It just brought in this wave of innovation coming from people that had no idea about prosthetics and orthotics. They didn't know one thing about it, but they brought in this different perspective of the outdoor world, which has great technology and great products, and brought it into our little space. And not only changing our industry in terms of providing adjustability, but we're also changing our industry in terms of how we come about things like marketing and sales and how we show up at shows.
Yeah,
we're trying to be innovative on all fronts and really kind of testing the limits and pushing some of the boundaries a little bit. But I think it's needed to advance and you know, advance this industry and make it, you know, move forward.
Yeah.
So I'm grateful for people like your kids that bring up great ideas, or your wife. I'm grateful for, you know, the other team members that we have at Click Medical that bring in this outside perspective, a different way of looking at things, which I think is fantastic. I think it's much needed in our little niche-y, little small industry.
I fully agree. Great, Joe. It's been a real pleasure. And I know we could continue talking for another hour or two. It's really interesting.
I'm sure.
But I think we call it a day for today, and maybe have you on the show next year again or something like that.
Yeah,
it's
that sounds
really
great.
Lovely chatting with you. Joe, thank you so much for taking the time, for sharing your wealth of experience, and for letting us in on some of the behind-the-scenes stories of Click Medical and the adjustable socket. It's
Absolutely.
Really been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
I hope you enjoyed the show. Make sure to hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any of the new episodes. And I would really appreciate it if you leave me a rating on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you want to learn more about The Active Amputee, make sure to head over to www.theactiveamputee.org, where you find hundreds of articles from amputees for amputees. Articles filled with inspiration, information, and encouragement to be active and live a rewarding life. I see you all again for the next episode. Until then, all the best. This is Bjorn from The Active Amputee.